Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, July 2nd, 2021. Here are some of your headlines. U.S. creates 850,000 jobs in June, above expectations. President Joe Biden celebrating, declaring our economy is on the move and we have COVID-19 on the run. As the busy holiday weekend travel ramps up, continuing concerns about the rapidly spreading COVID-19 Delta variant. Also, for those taking planes, a new Biden administration proposal on refunding your checked baggage fees if your bags are lost and not found and delivered quickly enough. And in Afghanistan, U.S. troops handing over Bagram Airfield to the Afghan military after nearly 20 years. But does that mean the full U.S. military withdrawal from that country is almost complete? We start with the jobs report, this from CNBC. Job growth leaped higher in June as businesses look to keep up with a rapidly recovering U.S. economy, the Labor Department reported Friday. Non-farm payrolls increased 850,000 for the month, compared with the Dow Jones estimate of 706,000, and better than the upwardly revised 583,000 in May. The unemployment rate, however, rose to 5.9% against the 5.6% expectation. C-SPAN spoke to Washington Post economics correspondent Heather Long on Friday morning's Washington Journal about the report.
What we've been expecting to happen is finally happening, and that is as people are getting vaccinated and feeling safe and content again, and the economy is reopening, we are seeing a ton more job openings and opportunities, and we are finally seeing a lot more hiring, workers feeling like they're ready to return to jobs, like it's safe to return to jobs. And that was a big part of what happened this month. 40% of the hiring in June, the bulk of it was happening in leisure and hospitality, so restaurants and hotels and arts and entertainment, also a big surge in education jobs.
But also a slight uptick in the unemployment rate from 5.8 to 5.9%. Can you explain?
Yeah, that's right. And the basic story here is obviously it didn't go up a ton to 5.8 to 5.9, but the key takeaway is despite all of these job openings we're all seeing, there's still a flat labor force participation. That's a fancy way of saying we don't really have a lot more job seekers. Quite a few people are still sitting on the sidelines. Maybe I often hear about childcare issues, or I hear about people who want to take a chance and go in a different direction. So they're not taking the first job that's available to them. They're thinking about starting a business or going in a different direction, maybe going back to school. So that's a little bit surprising. That's why we see that slight uptick in the unemployment rate. We're just not seeing a huge number of people searching for work again yet.
I want to go to this chart that's available in your website at WashingtonPost.com. I know you've seen it. You can see the huge drop in March and April of last year, really a nosedive of people being forced out of work when we had a record high of about 152 million people working in February of last year. And now, based on your reporting, we're back up to about 145.8 million. So we're still 7 to 8 million short of where we were during the early stages right before the pandemic hit.
Yeah, that's right. The number I keep in my head and I always look at first is we're about 70% recovered. The good news is that's a lot further along than most people thought we would be. Certainly sitting in June of last year, things seemed very dark and we wondered if we were on the verge of a Great Depression. We've managed to avoid that. But as you point out, there are still 6.8 million jobs left to go just to get back to where we were, the same number of people employed just before the pandemic. Obviously, there's also been population growth, so that number could even be a little higher in terms of how many people we'd like to get back. I will say with this pickup in the hiring that we saw in June, if we could keep this pace going around 800,000 or so jobs a month, we would be back to full strength in early 2022, early to mid next year. And again, it's not great. We wish we could do it faster, but it's a lot better than most people thought only a few months ago.
Heather Long covers economics for The Washington Post. Reaction from the White House, President Biden speaking in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building, part of the White House complex.
We're getting prepared to celebrate Independence Day, Today's job news brought us something else to celebrate. This morning, we learned that in June, our economy created 850,000 jobs. 850,000 jobs. Wages went up for American workers. Since it took office, our recovery has created an average $600,000. They probably wish those 600,000 jobs paid $600,000 a year. But 600,000 jobs per month. We've now created over 3 million jobs since it took office. More jobs than have ever been created in the first 5 months of any presidency in modern history, thanks to the incredible work of the entire team. This is historic progress, pulling our economy out of the worst crisis in 100 years. Driven in part by our dramatic progress in vaccinating our nation and beating back the pandemic, as well as other elements of the American Rescue Plan. Today, the U.S. is the only major advanced economy where the OECD projections of future output are higher today than they were in January 2020 before the pandemic hit. And America was ranked first in Bloomberg's COVID resilience ranking. None of this happened by accident. Again, it's a direct result of the American Rescue Plan. And at the time, people questioned whether or not we should do that, even though we didn't have bipartisan support. Well, it worked.
President Joe Biden also going on to tout his infrastructure spending proposals, both the physical infrastructure and the programs he calls human infrastructure, pending before Congress. Yahoo Finance reporting on the June jobs report, the biggest payroll gains were again in the leisure and hospitality industries, which were the hardest hit in the earlier stages of the pandemic. Other industries also saw strong gains in June in the service sector. Retail trade added 67,000, or more than double the May gain, and professional and business service job gains also doubled month to month to 72,000. Some reaction to the jobs report from Republicans. Kevin Brady is the ranking member on the Ways and Means Committee. He tweeted, "Even with June jobs report, reopening economy, and trillions in stimulus, President Biden has quickly fallen 679,000 jobs short of White House projections. Other troubling signs, workers still on sidelines, prices rising faster than wages, hurts families, Main Street businesses." And this tweet from Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel, "Today's jobs report reaffirmed that Biden's policies are holding back the recovery he inherited. The unemployment rate rose to 5.9% in June. While Republican governors are leading on reopening, Biden's agenda is keeping far too many workers on the sidelines." On Wall Street, the Dow up 152, NASDAQ up 116, S&P up 32. Just a couple of days until the 4th of July holiday, that was the deadline that President Biden had set for a goal to have 70% of adults in the U.S. at least partially vaccinated against the coronavirus. Looks like he's not going to reach that goal, landing a few percentage points short. And at the same time, the new Delta variant of COVID-19 has been making inroads in some parts of the country where vaccination rates are the lowest. A question about this today to the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
Ask you as we head into July 4th very quickly. Obviously, the White House has said repeatedly that shots are safe, they're effective, they're available. But obviously, many states with the lowest vaccination rates are governed by Republicans right now. What risk does the White House believe those pockets of non-compliance might pose to other Americans, to the rest of the country right now?
Well, I think the guidance from medical experts is very clear. If you're vaccinated, you're safe. If you are not vaccinated, you're at risk of getting the virus. And the Delta variant, the transmissibility of it, which we've seen from medical experts who have made clear that it is far more transmissible, it can be deadly, it can make people incredibly sick, is just a reminder of what risks people are putting on themselves if they don't get vaccinated.
And then, so for clarity though, what risks to my question, what risk do you think those pockets of non-compliance pose, not just to themselves, but to the rest of the country?
I wouldn't look at it as pockets, Peter. I would look at it as individuals in those pockets who are not vaccinated are certainly at a significant risk given the transmissibility of the Delta variant.
But you don't think that risk is larger than those individuals?
If individuals are vaccinated in those areas, then they are protected. We have seen, also had some news this morning about the effectiveness of J&J, but also we know that Moderna and Pfizer are effective in fighting and protecting individuals from the Delta variant. I'd also note that we announced just yesterday our plans for a surge team, largely in response to the rise of the Delta variant across the country, that will include the physical deployment of personnel, virtual assistance, direct sharing of resources. We've already deployed this team to Colorado to collaborate with the local Department of Health in Mesa County, and that's something we will continue to work with communities across the country to implement to address the rising threat of the Delta variant.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki during her daily briefing. During this long 4th of July holiday weekend, under many fewer pandemic restrictions than last year, AAA expecting 48 million Americans are going to travel, over 90% of them by car, but also 3.5 million people flying. And today, the director of the White House National Economic Council, Brian Deese, says there's a new Biden administration proposal for new rules that the airlines must follow when it comes to some passenger fees.
I want to confirm that there was some reporting this morning that the president is indeed intending to direct the Department of Transportation to engage in a series of rulemakings to protect airline passengers and to promote fair competition in the airline industry. This may sound esoteric, but I'll make it very simple, particularly for any of you who have flown or are intending to fly now that that's more available. These rulemakings will specifically ensure that if a passenger pays to check a bag, they should get that fee back if the bag doesn't arrive on time. Also, if the passenger pays for a service like Wi-Fi and it doesn't actually work, that you will get that fee back quickly. And also, the president will direct DOT to ensure rulemaking that will establish clearer upfront disclosure of fees. One of the challenges in being able to clearly understand baggage fees, change fees, cancellation fees at the time of the purchase of an airline ticket, so that consumers have more and better information in understanding what they actually are paying for. And that this this direction will be part of a broader effort that the president will release shortly around driving greater competition in the economy in service of lower prices for American families and higher wages for American workers.
Brian Deese leads the White House National Economic Council, part of today's White House briefing. About those baggage fees, a Transportation Department official telling ABC News, the proposal will require refunds if airlines fail to deliver a bag within 12 hours of the passenger's U.S. flight touching down, or within 25 hours after an international flight. The article goes on, current regulations require refunds only if bags are lost, although airlines must compensate passengers for reasonable incidental expenses incurred while their bags are delayed. Also, as part of the 4th of July holiday, a naturalization ceremony today at the White House for 21 new U.S. citizens, several now serving in the U.S. Armed Forces. They're originally from 16 different countries, ranging from Afghanistan to New Zealand. President Biden joined by the Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, himself a naturalized citizen. And the secretary spoke about his mother bringing him to the U.S. from Cuba and her philosophy of life.
With each new day, we have the opportunity and the obligation to make ourselves better. Tomorrow, we can and we must make ourselves better than we are today and each and every day. And our country gives us this opportunity. We can view each day for our country, the life of our country, in the same way. Today, our nation is better than it was yesterday. It is better today in part because we have in you new citizens of it, each of you strengthened with the power and responsibilities that your American citizenship brings, and all of us strengthened as a result. Our country is also better today because its identity and its fabric as a nation of immigrants is stronger because of you.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas at today's White House ceremony. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, the agency that oversees the naturalization process, is holding 170 similar ceremonies across the country this week and next to swear in 10,000 new citizens in celebration of Independence Day. This is Washington Today. An update on the condo building collapse in Surfside, Florida, the search for survivors and the recovery of victims continuing. Governor Ron DeSantis saying two more people have been found in the rubble dead, both children, one of them a 7-year-old, child of a Miami firefighter. That raises the death toll to 20. Also, the number of people still unaccounted for dropping from 145 to 128. This after duplicate names were removed from the list and some residents reported as missing turned out to be safe. Governor DeSantis during a news conference also talking about the impact of an approaching storm.
Of course, as many of you know, Tropical Storm Elsa has now become Hurricane Elsa, and we are working. I've ordered our Department of Emergency Management to start preparing a potential state of emergency, so I'm going to be working on that today. If we do the executive order, that will assist our emergency response team in preparations for Hurricane Elsa. Now, we don't know exactly the track that it's going to take. It is possible that we could see tropical force winds as early as Sunday night in southern Florida. And so we're actively monitoring the situation like we always would do with these storms. But given what we're doing on this site, we're also paying special attention to any impacts that could happen here in Northeast Miami-Dade County. It is possible that this area could see tropical storm force winds. Not guaranteed, but it is possible. And so our Department of Emergency Management is assuming that that will happen and making the necessary preparations to be able, obviously, to protect a lot of the equipment. You could potentially have an event with the building as well. So we are going like we normally would with these things. This is just what we do, but we're adding this special emphasis on this site because we understand the sensitivities involved. How it will work most likely is the further west that this thing tracks, the less likely, of course, there'll be impacts here, but it would likely be stronger when it got to the Gulf of Mexico. The more it interacts with land, the Dominican Republic and Cuba, the more likely you would be to slow it down. But there will be some impacts in Florida, you know, at some point, starting as early as Sunday night. So we're going to be working on that and working on this. We'll do them both on a dual track, and obviously our emphasis with the storm, do what we normally do, but then also a special sensitivity to anything that would need to be done to make sure that the efforts here are supported and protected.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in Miami-Dade. Hurricane Elsa is the first hurricane of the 2021 season. CNN reports that Elsa is the earliest fifth named storm on record, pushing this season ahead of the pace set by the record-breaking 2020 hurricane season. First hurricane of the season typically isn't seen until August 10th, with the average date of the first tropical storm falling on July 9th. Washington Today continues in a minute. And welcome back to Washington Today. A few more headlines, this from the Supreme Court. Couple of cases dealing with religion. First, the court says it will hear a case against the state of Maine over a law that prohibits the use of financial aid through a state program to attend religious schools. But the court has declined to take a case from Washington State about a flower shop owner accused of discriminating against a gay man by refusing to provide flowers for his wedding due to religious beliefs. And President Biden naming more nominees for ambassadorships, including for Germany, Kosovo, and Ghana. And for Germany, the person who was suspected of getting the nod, reportedly, did get it. Amy Goodman, president of the University of Pennsylvania. In Afghanistan, the U.S. military leaving Bagram Airfield after nearly 20 years, turning it over to the Afghan National Security and Defense Force. Associated Press writes, the withdrawal from Bagram is the clearest indication that the last of the 2,500 to 3,500 U.S. troops have left Afghanistan or are nearing a departure months ahead of President Joe Biden's promise that they would be gone by September 11th. President Biden was asked about it today at the White House.
to us about Afghanistan. Is the drawdown going to be done in the next few days?
No. No, we're on track exactly as to where we expect it to be. But I wanted to make sure there was enough, quote, running room that wouldn't be able to do it all to September. There'll still be some four forces left, but it's a rational drawdown with our allies, and it's making, so there's nothing unusual about it.
Are you worried that the Afghan government might fall? I mean, we are hearing about the Taliban is taking more and more districts.
Look, we're in that war for 20 years, 20 years. And I think I met with the Afghan government here in the White House, in the Oval. I think they have the capacity to be able to sustain the government. There's going to have to be, down the road, more negotiations, I suspect. But I am concerned that they deal with the internal issues that they have to be able to generate the kind of support they need nationwide to maintain the government.
I
want to talk about happy things, man. Well,
if there is evidence that Kabul is threatened, which some of the intelligence reports have suggested, it could be in 6 months or thereabouts, do you think you've got the capability to help provide any kind of air support, military support, to them to keep the capital safe, even if the U.S. troops are obviously fully out by that time?
We have worked out an over-horizon capacity that we can be value-added, but the Afghans are going to have to be able to do it themselves with the Air Force they have, which you're helping them maintain. I'm not going to answer any more questions on Afghanistan. Look, it's 4th of July. I'm concerned that you guys are asking me questions that I'll answer next week, but on this holiday weekend, I'm going to celebrate it. There's great things happening. Economy's growing faster than any time in 40 years. We've got a record number of new jobs. COVID deaths are down 90%. Wages are up faster than any time in 15 years. We're bringing our troops home. We have all across America, people are going to ball games and doing good things. This is a good. I'll answer all your negative questions, not negative, your legitimate questions.
President Joe Biden questioned by reporters at the White House after his opening remarks about the June jobs report. On Afghanistan, a spokesman for the Taliban tweeting that the U.S. forces leaving Bagram airfield is a positive step, and he urged, quote, withdrawal of foreign forces from all parts of the country. Another step taken today on the issue of changing how sexual assault in the U.S. military is dealt with. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says he has accepted the core recommendations from the Independent Review Commission on Military Sexual Assault. Those recommendations include removing investigation and prosecution of cases involving sexual assault, domestic violence, child abuse, and retaliation from the armed forces chain of command. And President Biden putting out a statement saying he strongly supports Secretary Austin's position. The report from the Pentagon also warning of a wide chasm between what senior leaders believe is happening under their commands and what junior enlisted service members actually experience. The leader of the review commission, Lynn Rosenthal, held a briefing today at the Pentagon.
Hi, I'm Bob Burns from Associated Press.
Yes, sir.
At the outset, you mentioned that military leaders do tolerate sexual assault despite what they say in public. I'm wondering which of your recommendations and in what way will they change that?
Well, first, I should say we visited 6 installations and talked to a number more virtually. And in every single meeting with junior enlisted members, this emerged. The conversation was the same with every group we talked to across the services. So that's how we know that that's true. And our focus in LOE3 on really equipping and training leaders will make a difference. So selecting the right leaders, using qualitative and narrative feedback to select the right leaders, develop them on this particular issue with key competencies, and then evaluating them on how well they're doing. We also recommend a series of adjustments to the climate survey process. So I really want to commend the department and the work they're doing on climate surveys. There's a complex tool that measures climate across several different issues. And we would supplement that by a pulse survey or quick check of the unit to see what the climate is around sexual assault and sexual harassment specifically. And then when we can measure it, we can get commander's assistance in addressing it.
Lynn Rosenthal with the Independent Review Commission on Military Sexual Assault today at the Pentagon. She is formerly the first ever White House advisor on violence against women. As mentioned earlier, President Biden putting out a statement supporting the move to remove cases concerning these issues, sexual assault, domestic violence, child abuse, from the military chain of command, as the review commission recommended. But on Capitol Hill, Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand has been advocating for a broader change, having independent military prosecutors handle all felonies involving the military. Reporters questioned today to the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
With regard to the president and sexual assault cases, and kind of where they are in the military chain of command, the president stopped short of where Senator Gillibrand is on having independent prosecutors handle felonies that call for more than a year in a prison. What is the White House's thinking on kind of the decision relative to that proposal?
Well, first, I would note that we put out a statement from the president, and let me just highlight some components of that for all of you, because this was an important step forward in his view today. He strongly supports Secretary Austin's announcement that he is accepting the core recommendations put forward by the Independent Review Commission on Military Sexual Assault. He views sexual assault as an abuse of power, an affront to our shared humanity, and sexual assault in the military is doubly damaging, in his view, as it also shreds the unity and cohesion that is essential to a functioning U.S. military and to our national defense. He also noted, and just to answer your question, that he looks forward to working with Congress to implement these necessary reforms. He's grateful for the leadership of Senator Gillibrand, the work of Senator Ernst, Representative Speer, and Representative Mullen, who have worked in strong bipartisan way to move this forward. And certainly he feels that this announcement and the decision by Secretary Austin is a step forward.
The White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. Associated Press writing that Senator Gillibrand has the support of 66 senators for her bill that would have independent prosecutors handle all felony cases that call for more than a year in prison. But AP writes other key lawmakers and the leaders of the military services have balked at including all major crimes. There are concerns that stripping control of all crimes from commanders could hurt military readiness, erode command authority, and require far more time and resources. The 2020 Major League Baseball World Series champions, the Los Angeles Dodgers, were in Washington, D.C. today, making a stop at the White House. Star pitcher Clayton Kershaw spoke about the season last year, which stopped in its tracks for a few months due to the coronavirus pandemic, then restarted, but shortened with empty stands. And he talked about what a difference a year makes.
Hi, everybody. First time to speak at the White House, so sorry if I'm a little nervous, but... Mr. President, thank you for having us. It's an honor to be here and get to celebrate our World Series victory here at the White House. Last season was a special one for us, but it was also a challenging one for our country, and our hope was that we were able to provide just a little bit of joy and comfort and relief to our fans that were going through some tough times. This season, it's been incredible to have fans back in the ballpark. We miss their energy and their passion for the game, and it means so much to us that people are coming back to the ballpark and things around the country are going back to normal. Hopefully, like you said, we can come visit again next year. So with that, we brought something for you and the Vice President, and now our team owner, Mark Walter, is gonna bring that down for you.
LA Dodgers pitcher Clayton Kershaw and the team presenting to President Biden and to Vice President Kamala Harris customized jerseys. Also in attendance at the White House today, the Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti and Congressman Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader who represents the 23rd Congressional District in California, which is just north of Los Angeles. Thanks for being with us today on Washington Today. It's available as a podcast. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts, and also download the free C-SPAN radio app to listen anywhere. And a note about our schedule, Washington Day will not be produced for the next several days next week, but we'll be back July 12th. Hope you have a good night and enjoyable long 4th of July holiday.